This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation. Mystery Hour with James O'Brien.
9 minutes after 12, even later than usual, which means that you know how the show works by now. The more we diverge from the well-trodden path of the programme, the more likely you are to find a little slot on the switchboard that you can jump on if you're quick enough. And there are currently two phone lines free, 0345 6060 973. If you try to get through and fail to get through, be very patient, keep trying. We do sort the wheat from the chaff live in the studio, which means a lot of people ring in with questions that are either not very good or not very suitable, or questions that we can remember answering relatively recently. So just because it's engaged now doesn't mean it will necessarily be engaged now. There are hardly any rules at all, apart from that guard against dullness and repetition. I don't generally like questions about motoring related matters, but as with most things on this programme, what starts off as a rule eventually just sort of withers and shrivels until none of us can really remember why we started with that rule in the first place. The number you need remains the same, and the simple premise is someone rings in with a question, you know the answer to it, and you ring in with the answer. The new board game, which a lot of people think is a joke. This is a bit like, a lot of people don't know that Keith is actually a real person. I'm going to have to actually, at our Christmas lunch, I may take a photograph of myself with Keith to prove that he's not some sort of figment of my imagination, or you know, some sort of sock puppet that we use to, I don't know, keep the wheels turning on the programme. Keith is a very real man. And the Mystery Hour board game is a very, very real thing. And the early reports, the early reviews are incredibly positive. I'm so positive, in fact, that I'm now doing that thing that I sometimes do, where I'm looking for the negative in a positive, and I'm thinking people seem to enjoy it even more than they enjoy the actual radio feature. But that's not something to be negative about. That's something to be positive about. It's better than the radio show because it's a lot more interactive and you don't have me wanging on in your ear every 20 seconds. The only thing you don't get is a Ray Liotta. But you could record the Ray Liotta off the radio and then play it if you end up playing Mystery Hour board game with someone who, miraculously, come Christmas, you didn't know that your cousin Vinny actually has a PhD in rocket science and was the first person ever to, I don't know, put a rocket in space or something. So you could create your own Ray Liotta moments. Anyway, if you want to find out more about it, go to mysteryhour.co.uk. 12:12 is the time. Let's get things up and running. Simon is in Derry. Simon, question or answer?
I have a question, please, James.
Yes.
If I was to plant one thing in my garden, what would absorb the most carbon dioxide?
Oh, what a lovely COP26 flavoured question. Isn't it?
Well, you might do your bit for the planet.
Yeah, good for you. So you could plant. I mean, how big's your garden? I mean, just establish a couple of variables. An average size garden, is it?
It's a fair size garden. To be fair, I could plant probably more than one of these things.
What's in it at the moment? It sounds like some sort of Gobi Desert in the middle of Northern Ireland.
Just grass at the moment and weeds.
Grass and weeds. So you want to plant the? What is the most environmentally friendly tree, really?
Or plant, or anything I can plant that will absorb the most carbon dioxide to go with my electric car.
And this is in a climate in Derry, so it's in a sort of fairly cold and wet corner of the planet, even after the effects of global warming and climate change.
Yes.
I love that question. Thank you, Simon. What can Simon plant in his garden that would absorb the most carbon dioxide? And feasible is the only word we'll use. He could feasibly plant it in his garden. And obviously, some people already will be going, oh, yes, but how much water will it absorb? But you just play the game, honestly. Natalie's in Caterham. Natalie, question or answer?
Hi, James. I've got a question, please.
Yes.
How do deaf people learn to read? I've got three young boys, and they've all used phonics and sounds as they learn to read. And I was just wondering how deaf people do it.
Because they can't hear the sounds being made out loud.
Yeah. Because as we make sounds and join the sounds together to make words, and so if we see a word we don't recognise, we can look at the phonics and the letters and work out what the word sounds like.
Yeah, I'm just showing my... No, it's a really good question, I think. How on earth? I'll tell you what, I'm cocky, Natalie, but some days even I get a bit frustrated with the level of my cockiness. How on earth could I even begin to try to answer that question? But I just did. I began to try to answer that question.
I think it's got to be somebody who teaches somebody, or perhaps who's been through that experience themselves, absolutely.
It does. So given that phonics are now the... I'm just trying to think whether or not the way we learnt to read would have been as...
Well, I remember having those little tobacco tins with little sample words in it and practicing them with my parents, but... I don't know whether...
Got a word in your head, the sound... No, I love that question. I hope we get an answer, because you've got me wondering
now.
Thank you very much indeed.
Me too.
Lovely stuff,
thank
Natalie.
You.
Thank you. So what is the best tree to plant or plant to plant in your garden to absorb CO2? And how do deaf people learn to read? Sometimes questions like that, when I repeat them back, can sound a little crass or insensitive. Natalie, categorically, as you know, and clearly was not, but it is still an area of interest. And, you know, curiosity is a wonderful thing. I now want to know, because the more you think about it, the more sense the question makes. How to sleep like a
log with a log of log. Hi, you're through to log.
I can't sleep. I think it might be my mattress.
You know, here's a thought. Try the Dream Sleep Match Service. It scans your entire body to find your perfect mattress in only 3 minutes.
How does it work?
Well, it's got more high-tech sensors than you can shake a stick at.
Sticks, because you're a log.
Give it a try today. Just drop into your local Dreams branch. Oh, somebody stop me. I'm here all week. Try the veal. No, but seriously, Dreams Sleep Matters.
18 minutes after 12, a truncated mystery hour, which means that I will endeavour, probably fruitlessly, to talk a bit less myself and make more room for you. Keith, stop celebrating. Chrissy's in Barnsley. Chrissy, question or answer?
It's a question.
Carry on.
On the International Space Station, which country's laws apply? So if you committed a crime, which country would you... You tried, because obviously if we go to, like, foreign country and you're in the British embassy, it's classed as, like, British soil.
Yeah.
So what would be the...
International waters? International waters?
I don't know.
Nor do I. And for some reason, if someone's ever asked this before, then the answer is definitely Russia. But it could be that I've just completely imagined that and no one has ever asked it before. What have you got planned, Chrissy?
No, nothing. I was just
you would say that, wouldn't you? You would say that.
If you killed somebody on the space station, obviously, and then we got into the debate of, well, you couldn't get away with it, because obviously they'd know who it was.
But whose jurisdiction? I know, but some countries have still got the death penalty, for example.
Exactly, that's right.
I like it. So if Chrissy killed someone on the International Space Station... whose jurisdiction would it fall under? I'd like that one. Number four is Paul in Scunthorpe. Paul, question or answer?
A question.
Yeah.
I'd like to know what the biological distance between cold-blooded and warm-blooded animals is. As in, for a warm-blooded animal, how is the blood heated? Where and how in the body is the blood heated?
That's not going to be the biological difference between cold-blooded and warm-blooded, is it? The answer to the second bit isn't going to be... I think it's got something to do with the reaction that heat has on the body for warm-blooded animals. Why am I doing this again, Keith? Why am I trying to answer these questions? This is ridiculous. I've got a board game to plug. I'm wasting all this time. So, the biological difference between cold-blooded and warm-blooded. Should we leave it at that? And then,
how the blood is heated in a warm-blooded animal? Is the reaction
I don't know that we've got the cart before the horse on that. Are we sure the blood is heated rather than the blood is warm because they're warm-blooded animals? Cold-blooded animals need heat more than warm-blooded animals do, don't they? The reptiles are the ones that are basking in the sun all the time.
Yeah. So how is the blood warm in a warm-blooded animal? What makes it warm?
Okay.
It can't generate its own heat, does it? I don't know.
I don't know either. I'll start on what's the difference between cold-blooded and warm-blooded, and if the explanation admits another question, I'll chuck it into the mix. But I think a good answer to that question will answer all the other questions that you're thinking of and I'm thinking of at the moment. 12:21 is the time. What's the best thing to plant in my garden if I want to... hoover up carbon dioxide? How do deaf people learn to read? What country's laws, what jurisdiction does the International Space Centre fall under? And what's the difference between cold-blooded and warm-blooded? I like this. And it's a good selection this week. A nice start. 21 minutes after 12 is the time. Johnny is in Kilburn. Johnny, question or answer?
Hi, James. It's a question.
Carry on, Johnny.
When was the heart symbol or heart emoji first used in popular culture to mean love?
I think it was medieval times. But But you're not going to take that, are you?
Not quite.
No, I wouldn't. You need a little bit more than that. I just like, you know, sort of gallantry and chivalry and all that malarkey. Just trying to. Sometimes I speak, Johnny. I don't know if you've noticed this over the years. I speak in a slightly vague and unfocused fashion, and lo and behold, an answer actually pops into my head, and I drag up some recondite piece of knowledge from the back of my memory banks. But that's not happening today. I got nothing.
Okay.
I got nothing. Mm. I'll leave it on the board, and obviously, I'm going to drop the emoji from your question.
Sure. I still have faith in you, James,
thank
by the way.
You. Thank you, thank Johnny. You. Thank you. You've got to have faith. 22 minutes after 12 is the time. When did the heart start appearing in popular culture, or in culture, as a symbol of love? Rob's in Warrington. Rob, question or answer?
Hi, James. It's a question, please.
All right, Rob, go on.
I just returned from my holiday this morning. As on most holidays, I'm sure many people, I ended up playing quite a lot of pool.
Oh, yes.
You know, like snooker or pool.
Where were you?
Barbados.
Well, I don't want to go off on a tangent. I like a game of pool, but I've got to be honest with you. After lockdown, I haven't been to a hot country for 2 years. I don't think I would have been playing much pool if I'd been in Barbados for the last week, Rob.
It might sound a bit smug, but it was so hot, you do need some relief from the sun.
Fair enough. So, quick game of pool, cooling lager.
Pride myself away from the bar for 5 minutes to...
have a quick game of pool. I like it a lot. Yeah.
Have a quick game of pool. So
fair enough.
As we were playing pool with my now fiancé.
Did you propose while you were out there?
I did, yeah.
Oh, round of applause for Rob. Come on.
Thank you.
Well done.
Thank you.
You were a bit worried she was going to say no, otherwise you wouldn't have taken her all the way to Barbados, would you?
I know, it would have been a long flight home. But yeah, as we were playing pool, I set the balls up and I said to my partner, you know, chalk up, as in chalk up the cue.
You're an old romantic, aren't you, Rob?
Habit. There's no euphemism there. So yeah, I said chalk up, and she said, "Why'd you put chalk on a cue?"
Yeah,
and I said, "Well, I don't know. It's just you just put chalk on." And then I thought maybe it's to grip it better because you use chalk in climbing or weightlifting,
gymnastics, and
but
all
I thought,
of that.
The way that the cue hits the ball, it's like an impact. So surely it doesn't need grip. I didn't know why do you chalk up a cue?
I think you're very close to the answer, and I would provide it myself, but I know that I quite a lot of professional sports people listen to the program. For example, Matthew Pinsent just got in touch to say it was John Amici who gave us that quote about cultures being defied by the worst people in them a couple of weeks ago. But I know that Michael Holt, Hitman Holt, the snooker player, most days he's listening. I don't know whether he's listening today, so I'm not going to answer your question myself, just in case Michael or any other professional cue meisters are listening.
Yeah.
But you are very, very, very close to getting the answer
yourself. It didn't make sense to me, the why grip, because it's... Grips is something you sustain.
Yeah.
Like you want to hold grip of it, but it doesn't. You don't. It just impacts the ball.
You'd think so. And I mean, I don't want to cast aspersions on your techniques here, but the better you are at pool, the less it becomes just about impact, and becomes instead about. I mean, to continue the theme of double entendres, you're forgetting all about screwing.
There's been quite a few euphemisms.
Congratulations. What's your fiance's name? I want to give my congratulations to both of you, if I may.
It's Josie.
Josie and Rob, seriously, that's absolutely lovely, and massive congratulations to you. We will try and get you an answer to that question. 26 minutes after 12, walking the tightrope today. Oh, what a joy. Raj is in Uxbridge. Raj, question or answer?
Question.
Carry on.
Okay, why is there an abundance of helium-3 on the moon but not on Earth?
What?
Helium-3 is basically this element that seems to be abundant on,
how do you know?
On the moon.
How do you know?
Well, there's this film, I can't remember which one it was that starred.
There's no atmosphere. Well, there must be something. Helium-3, what is helium-3?
Well, it's a nuclear element, if I can say the word properly. Apparently, it might be the future in terms of nuclear fuel. If we ever run out of nuclear fuel here, there's plenty of it on the moon.
Really?
But my, yeah. Okay. Yeah. So my question is, why is there an abundance of helium-3 on the moon and not on Earth?
It'd be the solar wind, won't it?
I don't know. I'm not a scientist. Hence, the reason why I'm asking the question.
Well, yeah, all right, clever clogs. Nor am I. Hence, why am I answering the question? I don't know. We will. Why is there so much helium-3 on the moon, and not on Earth? I know nothing about any of this, so I don't know why I'm being playing silly beggars. Frankly, I like it.
There's a bit of a double-edged question with this as well.
Well, go on, and I'll decide.
In terms of the cost of retrieving it as well, is it worthwhile to retrieve it as well?
Well, hopefully that will come up in a sort of, you know, in an attendant fashion, but I can't weigh in with two questions, as you well know. 27 minutes after 12. Why do we chalk our snooker cues? Why is there so much helium-3 on the moon? When did the heart become a cultural symbol of love? What's the difference between cold-blooded and warm-blooded? If someone commits a crime on the International Space Centre, under what country's jurisdiction does it fall? And how do deaf people learn to read? And what is the best thing to plant in my garden if I want to hoover up loads of carbon dioxide? Tim's in Welling Garden City. Tim, question or answer?
Hi, James. It's an answer.
Carry on, Tim. Top man.
It's an answer to the tree question.
Oh, splendid.
So there's sort of two answers to it, depending on whether you just want to hoover up carbon dioxide or if you want to actually look after nature as well at the same time. Because the UK is actually one of the worst least biodiverse countries in the whole of the world.
Is it?
It's about 160th on out of 192 countries, so it's very far down. And so the first answer, which is just for carbon dioxide, it would be some sort of pine tree.
Okay,
such as a Sitka spruce, because it's to do with the density of their ability to absorb carbon dioxide, and pine needles are obviously very fine.
Yeah.
So they something like a Sitka spruce doesn't actually lose its leaves.
So it's working all year round. I hadn't thought of that. So evergreen versus deciduous is going to come into play.
Yeah, but the downside of that is it's not a native tree, so it has very little value to nature.
Okay.
So the actual answer that I would go for is actually an oak tree if your garden's big enough, because oak trees have a habit of taking over spaces. They love light. They're also the most biodiverse tree we have.
Don't they take ages to grow, though?
Well, I know, yes, but in that regard, they are absorbing carbon for much longer. So there's trees.
And of course, it was such a silly, what a stupid contribution that was from me. Well, you don't have to say yes quite so quickly. I know it wasn't necessarily that stupid. But of course, you're thinking about decades, not just 10 minutes, aren't you? So the best thing you could plant for the planet is going to be around long after you are.
Yeah, I mean, there's two sort of answers to that. Again, whether you want a fast regeneration, say for example, an oak tree will help nature.
There's planting an acorn, and then there's planting a sapling, and then can you get kind of a tree that's underway? How much do they cost? You know,
if you went to, so I actually, I'll give away my qualifications. Yeah. I used to work for the Woodland Trust.
Oh, I thought so.
So you can actually go to their website. You can purchase saplings from their website that are native UK sourced and grown saplings. So their acorn was harvested in the UK.
Yeah.
And then the actual sapling was grown up to what we call a whip, which is sort of 18 inches tall.
Right.
And they're all grown within UK nurseries as well. So the actual tree never leaves the UK, so there's no chance of bringing disease.
You can plant a few. I've forgotten the gentleman's name up in Derry. What was the name of the chap in Derry? Yeah. Lovely bloke. Simon. He could plant a few. He could have a little oak forest. Well,
Although the only thing is you need to space them apart a lot. You need to space them apart, and they do like light, so they will...
Just the one, then. Smack in the middle of the garden. You look like a postcard.
There was an oak tree actually down in Hainault Forest in Alton that actually fell in the 1800s. But there's a piece of writing where the shadow of that oak tree was over a quarter of an acre, and its belly was about 10 meters around. So
Holy
it was circa 1,000 to 1,200 years old at the time it died.
Good Lord. I love trees. That's a lovely... I'm very late for the news. That's the only reason I'm moving on. Are you a dendrologist?
No, I actually used to be a I used to be one of the people that stands on the street asking people to give their money.
A tin shaker for the Woodland Trust, top man. Well, he's earned you one of these. I can't give you any money, but I can give you a round of applause. And get an oak tree, mate. You can't go wrong. Get a sapling from the Woodland Trust. 12:32 is the time. Amelia Cox is here now with your headlines. 12:36 is the time. History Hour is underway. We've done the first question, the carbon dioxide one. How do deaf people learn to read? Under what jurisdiction would the International Space Centre lie in criminal terms? Cold-blooded versus warm-blooded? What's the actual difference? Heart as a symbol of love. When did that begin? Why do you chalk your cue in snooker or pool? And why is there so much helium-3 on the moon? I've got two Kates for the price of one, it says here. Kate in Bounds Green and Kate in Bromley. Question or answer, Kates?
Hi, just to explain, I'm actually a sign language interpreter. I have Dr. Kate Rowley on FaceTime with me, who's going to answer your question. She's using sign language, she's deaf, and I'm going to be interpreting the answer, and there's going to be a few seconds delay and a few seconds pauses while you talk to each other.
Wow.
But that's how the conversation's going to work, because she's the best person to answer the question. Is that okay?
Is that okay? That's absolutely brilliant. Thank you both so much.
Brilliant. Okay, here she is. Hello, Kate saying. My name is Dr. Kate Rowley. I'm a deaf psycholinguist and I lecture at the Deafness, Cognition, Language and Research Centre. I'm here to answer the question about how deaf people learn to read. If you're thinking about how non-deaf children learn to read, they learn the spoken language first and they can hear the spoken language. And when they start to learn to read, it's about making the connection between what they hear and what they see on paper, the printed word. So if they're learning the word ball, for example, and then you have a picture of a ball as well with the printed word underneath it, you say, this is the ball, this is the word for ball, and they recognise the shape of the word. So when they hear the word ball, they've got the concept of the ball, and then they see the word and make the connection. Now, with deaf children, some have access to spoken language. It's quite varied. If they have access to spoken language and they have some knowledge of it, then they can make the connection between what they see and lip read and hear and the word in print. Some deaf children learn sign language. Well, many deaf children learn sign language, and it's the same concept. So if they learn the sign for ball, and they have the concept of ball, then you introduce the picture with the printed word, they make the connection, and they go from there. And that's how they learn to kind of recognise the printed word, by constant association with the object and the concept.
That is fantastic. What I know, you kind of touched on the concept, but what about abstract stuff? What about words that don't have any physical representation?
Okay, so in the same, I mean, hearing children learn abstract concepts by using language. So in discussion, they develop a wide vocabulary, and it's the same with deaf children. So the more language they use to communicate from an early age, so if you're talking about kind of emotional vocabulary like sad, happy, angry, then they start to know what the emotion is and how to describe it and what it means. And if there are signs like, you know, like mental states and the way they are thinking, and they're using words like that more in conversation, then if you read the printed words and you explain, oh, this means thinking, this means happy, this means sad. So it's about the more signs they have, the more language they have, the better their reading, the better their reading will be.
Thank you very much, Dr. Kate Rowley. That's absolutely brilliant. Speaking to Kate, the translator, how do we do this bit now? Because Dr. Rowley probably doesn't know how we reward contributors whose qualifications for answering a question are above and beyond our expectations. And I noticed that Dr. Rowley is a sort of world authority on precisely this field. So normally I do a round of applause And then I play a little clip. This is going to sound a bit odd. Then I play a little clip of the Hollywood actor, the Hollywood actor Ray Liotta, sharing one of our catchphrases from Mystery Hour. So would you be able to translate both of those, or is there another way of doing it? And how will she know that it's actually the real Ray Liotta talking?
Yeah, I can. I will translate that as best as I can.
Okay, well, we'll start with the round of applause. Here's the round of applause.
I'm just waving my hand.
Well, I'll do it as well. I'll do it as well. I'm waving my hands. And now, good luck with this one, Kate.
I'm Ray Liotta, and you're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. If you build it, they will come.
Yeah, I did that.
Thank you so much. Thank you, both of you. That was a really magical moment.
Thank you for having me, Kate Stone. Thank you.
Well, my pleasure entirely, Kate. Seriously. 12:41 is the time. You are listening to James O'Brien's Mystery Hour on LBC. Whoa. That was just nuts. That was so lovely. Ollie is in Welwyn Garden City. Ollie, you've got to follow that, mate. I'm not even going to try. Question or answer?
It's the question, please, James.
Carry on.
So recently, I had quite a bad cold. And I was all sort of blocked up, if you like.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought, well, I'll use one of these sort of vapor rub things. You know, the ones you sort of put up your nose to clear your nose?
Yeah.
And it works, and it clears my nose. But I was just wondering, what is that actually doing? How is that clearing my nose?
That's actually quite a good question, because you sort of take it for granted, and you can start to, well, it's like smelling salts, isn't it? But you mean chemically or biologically, what is actually going on?
Yeah, I use it all the time, and it always works, and I just never think, well, how did that just work? Because, it's you know, you're only just sort of breathing something, and then you're all cleared up, and everything seems fine.
Yeah, I mean, is it a bit like unblocking a drain with peroxide? Is it, I mean, it's just like a tiny watered-down version of that? I don't know. No, I don't. I honestly don't know, so I probably shouldn't have said that out loud in case anybody got... Do not do anything at home that remotely resembles what I just described. Nice one. Thank you, Ollie. You're on the list. We're talking about Vicks, really, but other brands are available. How do they work? How do the inhalers Vicks work? 12:42 is the time. Aye. Michael is in Nottingham. Question or answer?
It's an answer, James.
Is that the Michael I was waiting for?
I don't know. Was he waiting for me?
I don't know. Are you a professional snooker player?
I am.
Are you? Is your surname Holt?
It is.
It is the hitman, then. I was waiting. Let's give him a round of applause. There. No, let's wait. You might get it wrong. Stop.
Wrong, yeah.
Why do we chalk our cues, hitman?
Well, basically, you put the chalk on the end of the cue to stop a sheen appearing on the chip so that you can impart spin on the ball. So can you imagine the ball's a shiny spear, isn't it?
Yes.
So from the side of that, if your chip has got no grip, it will slide off it and you'll miscue.
So this is what the questioner didn't understand, is the importance of spin and screw on the ball.
Yep.
So to get the ball to almost roll back on itself when you smack it quite hard underneath, that you need the more grip you've got, otherwise you would just push through the ball and it wouldn't purchase is the word we're looking for, Michael.
Purchase. It's the perfect word, yes.
Yes.
That's what I was looking for. So yeah, you need to get purchase off the tip to impart that spin on the cue ball, and then otherwise it will just skid off, basically.
And so in fact, when he said, you know, mountain climbers do it and people on the trapeze do it, it is actually for exactly the same reason. It's to increase your grip or your purchase at the point of contact.
This is true. I think the weight training things, they do it because of the sweat, but obviously don't sweat, but it's the same principle.
I've just seen your tweet saying I can't get through.
Disaster.
Yeah, I say you've got to be patient. I think we're going to do two for two. It's a while since we've gone two for two on the old Ray Liotta's, but Michael Holt, professional snooker player, not only ringing in to answer the snooker question, but also the professional snooker player who I suggested would ring in to answer the snooker question. Round of applause first. And now we're two for two.
I'm Ray Liotta, and you're listening to James O'Brien on LBC.
Gotta love it. How's
you
things?
Build it.
That's very exciting.
That is, isn't it? I talked over it. That's terrible. That polluted it. What's the score at the moment? Are you, I mean, not literally at the practice table, but tournaments back to normal?
Yeah, trying to get back to normal. We're not going abroad, obviously. So hopefully, I think maybe into next year we might be going abroad to the Far East and whatnot and get the tour kicking.
Fantastic.
And get moving how we want it to. But it is what it is. We'll just keep plugging on.
I suppose snooker players found lockdown easier than most people, given how much of your life is spent on your own on a practice table anyway. or not?
Yeah, we got access to practice, so at the club, which was great. But it's not the same. You know, you're playing in front of no one, and it's this, we're not mixing. You don't sort of mix with the players as much as you used to because it was going and getting tested and whatnot. So, but you know, it's a first world problem. We've just got to crack
nicely
on
put. It is indeed. Give my regards to Mrs. Holt, won't you?
I will do. She'll be listening. She's making me look at the minute. It's fantastic. On a radio, I'm just so excited.
Well, you played a blinder. I mean, it's a downhill all the way now, Michael. You got a round of applause and a radiator on your first appearance. 12:46 is the time. 12:50 is the time. What a week. What an amazing mystery hour. I know I promised I'd start giving away copies of the new board game this week, but I can't because it's just so grown up. You've got to do all sorts of, what is it? Competition law or something. You've got to do careful like rules and regulations and stuff. I can't just go, oh, you sound nice. Have a freebie. So next week, we'll have written some small print, is it? Yeah. Terms and conditions. I'll probably have to do that thing where I go, terms and conditions apply. Or something. But so next week I will start giving them away. Obviously, you know, it's nothing to stop you helping yourself, filling your boots, getting ready for Christmas. And you can get hold of a copy at mysteryhour.co.uk. We've got our own special website, but I can't give them away until we've cleared it with the lawyers. So next week, I promise, I will start giving away a copy of the new Mystery Hour board game. I don't know in what circumstances I'll be doing it. I'd like to give it to whoever asks or answers the best question. So probably this week, no offence to the hitman, probably be Kate and Kate. But whether or not that I can do that within the boundaries of competition law, we'll have to wait and see. But I reckon we might clear the board. If I shut up and start taking some calls, then we might actually clear the board this week. It'd be a vintage mystery hour in every sense. And it was actually a bit under the hour as well, wasn't it? Because we spoke to Martin at the top. Richard's in Liverpool. Richard, question or answer?
Answer.
Carry on.
So this is the helium on the moon question. And you broadly had it right, I think. So the helium on the moon comes from the sun, from the solar wind, and the Earth's magnetic field blocks it for the Earth, but doesn't reach out far enough to block it for the Moon.
Wow.
So we, on the Earth, what helium-3 we have, well, a lot of it's primordial, what we started with, and some's from nuclear testing, which we probably don't want to generate too much more of.
No.
But so the Moon gets it from the Sun.
It really is that simple. Could we mine it? That was the other question. Would it be possible?
I mean, in principle, one can mine stuff. Flying to the moon and back? I mean, you know, we could send, was it Jeff Bezos who was flying up? I don't know. But is it practical?
I don't know.
I could sell you a bridge instead. You know?
Qualifications?
I'm Professor of Geophysics at University of Liverpool, specialising in geomagnetism, and I make magnetic field models.
Oh, do you think you deserve a Ray Liotta?
Probably not for far enough, particularly compared with your sign language thing. I'm not sure anyone deserves a Ray Liotta, so I think I will sing. But what I will say for the board game, while I'd have loved to have had it, my wife's already bought it.
Right,
so
I've given him a round of applause, at least. Fantastic. You lucky, lucky man. And what an amazing wife you've got. Do pass on my very best regards. Thank you, Professor. Laura is in Coventry. Laura, question or answer?
Answer.
Carry on.
The warm-blooded, cold-blooded question in animals. The terms are not like the sort of scientific correct terms, so they're just terms that people use. But warm-blooded is also called endothermic, and that means that an animal can regulate its own body temperature. So things like mammals like to keep their temperature around 37 degrees, and we burn energy, so we eat food and burn that for keeping ourselves warm. And then cold-blooded animals are poikilothermic, which means that they don't have that ability. So they have to move around to try and regulate their temperature to do what they need to do.
Do you think that'll work as an answer? So it's about whether the heat is coming from inside or outside?
Yeah, so like lizards and things will shuttle between warm places and then the shade. So in hot countries, that like in the desert, they'll move into the sun, and when they get too hot, they'll shuttle back into the shade. And then other animals might go into a torpor when it's too cold, so they'll stop doing all of their normal functions and have like a bit of a sleep to retain energy.
Yeah, that'll do, I think, won't it?
I
like qualifications.
I did an environmental science degree about 20 years ago.
Oh, that's nice. I thought you were going to say warm-blooded. Have a round of applause, Laura.
Thank you.
Thank you. Jeremy's in Wanster. Jeremy, question or answer?
Answer.
Carry on.
So this is, unglamorously, I'm afraid, this is about the nasal spray question. So yes. When you pop most of the nasal sprays up, you're using a drug, either xylometazoline or oxymetazoline, and what they do is they don't sort of dynarod your nose. They don't get rid of snot immediately. What they do is they shrink the blood vessels, because what's really blocking your nose is the swollen mucosa, the blocked walls of your nose. So they cause vasoconstriction. The blood vessels get smaller, and that's why you get a rapid opening up of your nose. I would say they can cause lots of problems, something called rhinitis medicamentosa, which is, if you use it too much, then much like somebody that's addicted to painkillers and then just needs painkillers to feel normal, if you use it for too long, more than a couple of days, your nose will then need it just to open up and you get hooked on them. So they're really
I knew there was, we don't recommend it. I knew there was a caution there. I didn't think I was qualified to provide it, but I mean, it's like anything else, isn't it, that has a sort of you build up a tolerance, for want of a posher way of
putting
it.
It's more than a tolerance, you build up a need for it. So once you've had it long enough, your nose is closed until you use it. So they're really awful, and in some countries they're not freely legally available for that reason.
Is that right, really? I did not know that. Qualifications?
GP.
Well, it worked for me as a phone consultation doctor. How did it work for you?
It was okay.
Who's listening to this thinking, I wish it was face-to-face?
Indeed. Well, we're awful.
We've got across this to bear. Not on this show, you're not, mate. Seriously, very grateful for all that you do. Have a round of applause on me.
Cheers.
Thank you very much. Some people thinking that the good professor in Liverpool should have got a Aureliota. It means we would have gone 3 for 3. Was it really his absolute specific field? We've got time. Can you ring him back? Seriously. Joe's in Kingston. Joe, question or answer?
Is it me?
It's Jess. I've got to start wearing my glasses at work. I'm so sorry. That's outrageous, Jess. Question or answer?
Don't worry, it's an answer.
Go on.
So, the space station question.
Yes.
The answer is essentially the space criminal will be prosecuted by the country that they are from, by the laws of the country that they are from. But it's a little bit more complicated than that, and it depends on various factors. But it is essentially to do with the Outer Space Treaty, because space has the same laws as these. And no one can claim the space, just as no one can claim the seas.
Qualifications?
The qualifications are, a lovely friend of mine works for a publication called The Conversation.
Yes.
And just last week she was complaining.
Yes.
But she was saying how I never read any of her articles.
Oh.
And last week I found out, and this was one of them. And I read it in an article in The Conversation.
Well, that'll do. And had she written the article?
No,
oh.
She's an editor.
Oh, well, you know, 1 out of 2 ain't bad. Have a round of applause. Hey, your poor friend. Abu Omar is in Winchester. Abu Omar, question or answer?
Hi, James. It's an ill-defined answer to a very difficult question. The one about the heart.
You've got 30 seconds.
It's mentioned in every ancient civilization, but probably it's the Egyptian civilization that mentioned it first.
In hieroglyphs?
Yes.
It would have been.
As being a centre of emotion and centre for
So like
love.
An early emoji. I mean, the hieroglyphic is the precursor of the emoji in many ways.
Yeah. But it's also been mentioned in the Greek. It's even mentioned in the Holy Quran. And there have been so many recent discoveries.
It has to be a pictogram, though. It has to be a picture, not just a verbal reference. It has to be a picture of a heart.
Well, it was mentioned as a written. Actually, it was even mentioned in relation to the mother of the prophet Moses. You know.
Okay. I don't know if we've gone for the picture as opposed to the words, but I'm definitely going to give you. What are your qualifications?
Heart surgeon. Thank you very
Shut
much.
Up. No, you're not. Okay. Are you really?
I am.
Oh, this is the best mystery we've ever had. An actual heart surgeon has rung in to answer a question about when hearts first appeared in popular culture.
I've given you
a round of applause.
No,
thank you very much. You get a round of applause. You don't get a Aureliota because I don't think your answer was actually definitive, which means I'm now giving lectures to a heart surgeon on heart-related matters live on the radio. In for a penny, in for a pound. Back to Richard in Liverpool. We've had a steward's inquiry. I mean, is your field of expertise, Professor, precisely the answer that you provided? I mean, are you one of the few people in the country who is at the forefront of academic research into the phenomena that we discussed a few moments ago?
I'm in geomagnetism, but not into
helium on the moon particularly. It's the kind of...
Yeah, but you wouldn't know about the helium on the moon if you didn't know about geomagnetism, would you?
I mean, it's kind of related. It's, you know, our public outreach is, you know, why do we make magnetic field models to look at these things?
Exactly.
And helium is one of the side effects.
Bingo. Right, I'm going to invite Sheila Fogarty to play the role of Commodus in Gladiator. Does the thumb go up or does the thumb go down?
Oh, listen, for lovely people like that, always up.
Right, let's go for three today.
I'm Ray Liotta, and you're listening to James O'Brien on LBC.
He's already got the ball game.
If you build it, they will come.
If only I brought it all in on time, it would have been a perfect mystery. That's it from me for another day. I'll be doing it again tomorrow from 10. Here's Sheila Fogarty.